the damage report, kind of. So, let me explain. So right now we're in my writing shed, and we're here because there has been a series of catastrophes, starting with us losing total power in our studio. So that's bad for a couple different reasons. One, I can't do the show from there. I don't have access to my computer and everything then. So we decided to rush home and do this. The other issue, though, is normally I would just use my computer and, you know, Skype into the show or whatever. The issue is that we still do a lot of the stuff through the studio, even when the guests aren't at the studio, even when the hosts aren't at the studio. So we couldn't do that either. And I used to do the show at home, so I could just go back to doing that, except it's a different computer and I don't have any of that stuff anymore. So here's what we've got. We've got a phone in a hut. And we're going to talk about some news. And thank you to all of you who are here and probably extremely confused. Obviously, we didn't have a pre-show because I was driving home. But we will have a full show. What we won't have, unfortunately, is Nalini Stamp of the Working Families Party was going to join us. She's been on the show before. This would have been the first time she was on the show with me. And I was so looking forward to talking to her. We chose a significant percentage of the rundown specifically for her. And because of all the chaos, that's not going to be able to happen. So hopefully we will be able get her back on at some point. So people are saying that there might be another stream. No, cancel it. Oh, can you tell? This is going to be informal. If you haven't watched one of our pre-shows, it's basically going to be kind of like that. So, yes, if we could cancel whatever that is, I might have done it, somebody else might have done it, I apologize. This is going to be the stream. You'll know because it's got me flailing in it. But anyway, welcome to my news shed. Gail says Dragon Hut. It is, in fact, the Dragon Hut. Nina and I are Dragon. Upgrading your membership to Tier 3 just in time for the Q&A, which is happening after this show. And will probably look a lot like this show. But anyway, through the course of some number of minutes, we'll see. We're going to talk about some percentage of our rundown, which includes, obviously, Paul Gosar being censured by Congress. I am not smoking cilantro. Anyway, we're going to have that. We've got more and more right-wingers lining up to give their base what they want, which is threats of violence. That's coming in a lot of different forms. We might have Build Back Better, maybe. We might even have it on the show, but possibly not. Bill Maher's the worst. And so much more. There's a lot happening. So, if you could do me a favor, I say this every time. Thank you, Moyo. Thank you. I appreciate that. But I really mean it this time. If you could like the stream and possibly share the stream or tweet at hashtag TDR Live, that way people know what's going on. That would be great. I'm sure there's some people who are probably over at Twitch right now and have no idea what's going on. I apologize for all of the animal photos. This is inspiration for my novel, actually. And if you'll believe it, my novel's nerdier. Anyway, okay, so with that, I'm going to also hopefully be able to follow along with your comments and things like that. I should be able to open this up, and I will be following the stream the same as all of you. How exciting is that? So I can go back and see your resubscriptions, and I can see your super chats and things like that. Moyo, I do appreciate that. That Fox Kitty says, "Oh, we get a pre-show that's as long as the full show. You get them combined. It's like peanut butter and chocolate, but with very low production values." Okay, so who's ready for some news? Are you already getting sick of me shaking the camera? I am. Anyway, Umberto says, "No need to apologize for the animals. They're innocent. They are innocent." Okay, so we're going to try to talk about some news. And, you know, so I apologize for all the tech problems. I also want to apologize in advance to Cassie, our editor, who is going to have to take all of this and try to turn it into a news show. So that's exciting. Anyway, yesterday, against all odds, there were consequences for actions in D.C. Paul Gosar, who last week tweeted a video of him as well as Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert killing AOC and then moving in for the kill against Joe Biden, was censured by the House, which has not happened in some time. They put forward a resolution. This is 99.9% the Democrats, so we'll give credit where credit is due, but the resolution states that depictions of violence can foment actual violence and jeopardize the safety of elected officials, as well as was witnessed in this chamber on January 6th. The resolution also states that violence against women in politics is a global phenomenon meant to silence women and discourage them from seeking positions of authority and participating in public life, with women of color disproportionately impacted. Yes, and thank you for finally acknowledging that. One continues to wonder, would they have done that if Biden hadn't been the video? I'm gonna be naive, maybe, and say, yes, it's too much. The video was just too much. But thankfully, the Democrats did line up behind AOC and Biden. They also, by the way, stripped Gosar of his seats on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, which AOC sits on, so that was gonna be a fun bunch of committee meetings there, as well as the House Committee on Natural Resources. Now, as we said, there is at least Some credit where credit should be due for some Republicans. Two Republicans voted in favor of the censuring, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who is, by the way, retiring. And so, look, it's easy to say they're freed up now to do this. They can do it because their party already hates them, so they can be at least something like honest. That's true, I guess. They're just all scared. They're terrified. They're terrified of their base. They're terrified of a primary challenge. They're terrified of Donald Trump. And only those who are already going to be under the gun, or actually retiring to avoid being under the gun, are freed up to defy them in literally any way. But that said, I do want to give you a little bit of the commentary around this. So prepare yourself to be whipped around for the first of many really weird uses of live video. So first, here is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
It is sad. It is a sad day in which a member who leads a political party in the United States of America cannot bring themselves to say that issuing a depiction of murdering a member of Congress is wrong, and instead decides to venture off into a tangent about gas prices and inflation. What is so hard? What is so hard about saying that this is wrong? This is not about me. This is not about Representative Gosar. But this is about what we are willing to accept.
I agree with her, though. Like, it is... It should be one thing for people like Gosar and Matt Gaetz to, just be trolls. Like trolls like any rando on social media, but then to turn government into that. But then the leadership who has very occasionally, like, you know, with the gold stars of Marjorie Greene, been willing to recognize what they are. They wouldn't do that in this case. The leadership is exactly the same as the basest Republican elected troll. And she's right. It is, I think, unprecedented. It shouldn't exist, but we can't expect any better of them than we can of any one of their members. I want to give you a little bit more, because at the end of the day, while we are going to show the commentary of some other people, this is about AOC. They've made it about AOC.
Not just the Republican leader, but I have seen other members of this party advance the argument, including Representative Gosar himself, the illusion that this was just a joke. That what we say and what we do does not matter so long as we claim a lack of meaning. Now, this nihilism runs deep. And it conveys and betrays a certain contempt for the meaning and importance of our work here. That what we do, so long as we claim that it is a joke, doesn't matter. And I am here to rise to say that it does. And as leaders in this country, when we incite violence with depictions against our colleagues, that trickles down into violence in this country.
Okay, so she's right. Look, it is trickling down. That's the fear, after all. They said all of these things, and then January 6th, in fact, did happen. It actually happened. People actually went to the Capitol and started destroying things. That's what they did. We had the, you know, talking about watering the Tree of Liberty with blood and all of that, talking about the election being stolen, and then we saw that, in fact, trickle down the way that she said. So this is serious. It is not just a joke. He can continue to say those sorts of things, saying there is no threat in the cartoon other than the threat immigration poses this country, which, by the way, is just, that's just doubling down on the message of the video. That's, again, we're more than a week out and, 2 weeks out? We're a long way out and we cannot get anything approaching an actual apology from him. By the way, he in fact went and retweeted the same video after being censured. And we'll get to videos of him. Don't worry about that. But there was one other individual that I wanted to call out. I really appreciated what he had to say. So let me see. Maybe the audio will be a little bit higher on this. So here we go.
Speaker, not since the Civil War has Congress operated under the constant threat of violence from some of its own members. But here we are. That is the behavior that Mr. Gosar has encouraged. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised, having watched so many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle incite and then express support for the insurrectionists who nearly killed us in this chamber on January 6th. We cannot let the Republican Party make Congress the only workplace in America where violence against your coworkers is not a crime, but a credential. If we don't hold people like Mr. Gosar accountable, we will only embolden the worst people in our politics to bring their fever dreams to life. That is why today we are standing up for the safety of our colleagues, for the safety of Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and for the future of our democracy. Madam Speaker, I yield back.
But anyway, a great point by Mondaire Jones. And, you know, look, the core message is what we've been saying since the video was spread last week. It's you would have higher expectations literally anywhere. I don't know where you've worked in your life. I've been a busboy at an Italian restaurant. I've run an experimental lab. I worked at a toy store. And you cannot threaten people that way at any of those. And saying that it's a joke afterward doesn't actually make it any better. If I had made a video of me as a transformer tearing the head off of a coworker at the toy store and then said, oh, it's just a joke, I don't think that that's going to save me. But maybe we just have higher expectations at toy stores than we do in the halls of Congress. Now, Paul Gosar spoke out in his defense while the censure debate was going on. And he wanted to place himself in an interesting historic context. So let's see what he's got here.
No matter how much the left tries to quiet me, I will continue to speak out against amnesty for illegal aliens, defend the rule of law, and advance the American First agenda. If I must join
Gentlemen's recognized 30 seconds.
If I must join Alexander Hamilton, the first person attempted to be censored by this House, so be it. It is done.
Okay, I don't think anyone else was making that particular comparison. Is this him still trying to appeal to the kids or whatever? We've moved on from Hamilton. It doesn't have the cultural cachet that it did a few years ago. No, and again, stop saying you're being censored. You're being censured. You're a representative. Words have meanings. You should know what they are. God, they just love being victims. They love it. It makes him Alexander Hamilton. But as weird as that was, it did actually get weirder because immediately after the vote happened, they wanted to put out a statement. And here is the statement that they ended up doing.
Hey folks on Getter, this is Congressman Paul Gosar. I just got back from the floor where the Democrats have censored me for challenging their America Last agenda. They should know I won't be bullied, even if they challenge me and try to take away my America First agenda. It's great to be on a service that's not going to be censored. And you even like cartoons. I love that. I'm looking forward to having great discussions with you, so tune in next time. Till next time, thanks again.
Okay, I'm glad that they left in the last few seconds, because it was already a 9 out of 10 on the awkward scale, and I think that they really nailed it with the last few seconds. I don't know who he was talking about that supposedly likes cartoons. I don't know. Again, you weren't censored, you were censured, actually. You took the video down and then retweeted it later on. Now, as many people have pointed out, that video was weird. What you should understand is, if somebody is having some sort of physical problem or mental problem or whatever, that's nothing to be ashamed of, that's nothing wrong or whatever. He does say that he doesn't. But it was fairly clear from that video that something potentially was going on. And, the only reason I didn't bring this up is ABC News' Jonathan Carl says that Republicans are saying that they think he's lost it in some way, that there is something that is different about him. Now, let me be very clear. I don't think that whatever that is, if it exists at all, has anything to do with the video that he put out. I think he put out the video he wanted to put out because he knows that that's what his base wants. But we'll see what ends up happening. He's not on his committees anymore, and he's not in power. So, like with Marjorie Greene, he's only sort of a representative any longer. But that said, if and more than likely when the Republicans take over next year, Marjorie Greene is saying that leadership has assured her that she will get her committee assignments back. Would we believe that Paul Gosar would not? I mean, after all, only two of them voted to censure him. So this consequence, to the limited extent that there's a consequence at all, even that in the end might end up being a temporary thing. That said, look, I'm glad that anything happened. I'm glad that someone is standing against the normalization of political violence, but I don't think that we're done with it. And I think that in all likelihood, the consequences against him are not consequences that matter to any of these representative trolls. Thank you, Robbie Cook. They want to be the focus of a two-week news cycle in the same way. They don't care if they're taking off their committees. They're not doing any work in there anyway. And so that video that you saw, wait until you see what they come up with next, because they are going to be tripping over each other to be even more grotesque. We are one day out from the censure of Paul Gosar for spreading a normalization of political violence targeted at AOC. But you can't even get one day away from that without more examples that is just the norm on the right. And we're going to give you a few. We're going to start off, unfortunately, with Marjorie Greene, who went on Steve Bannon's show to say this.
Joe Biden didn't win the 2020 election, and everything that we're seeing is the result of that. And those key states, mine, Georgia being one of them, listed as states that will definitely swing back Republican, is because we're Republican to begin with, not because we've turned blue. And we didn't elect Joe Biden in 2020. People are sick and tired of electing people over and over again that continue to fail us, continue to create more debt, and continue the long, slow slide into a communist country. And so I'm going to be pushing my party and holding my party accountable. We need a good plan that saves America and stops communism. And we need a good plan that restores America back to the republic that it was originally founded to be, because our freedoms are so precious, Steve, that we do not want to lose them. And the only way you get freedom back after you've lost it is with the price of blood.
So I am going to speak out in defense of Marjorie Greene very briefly. And that defense will come in this form. There are a lot of our officials who don't think about what they say and are not particularly bright people. They just start talking. And she is very much one of those people. So it is possible that, like Michael Scott, she had no idea where that sentence was going when she began it. But she got super specific, though. Like, if you just want to go into, we're making a long, slow slide into communism, and we need to get the republic that we had, and so we need to vote. Okay, that's fine. Doing some vague thing where, like, there's sort of plausible deniability if you're like, it's, you know, sometimes you gotta water the tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants. I mean, I'm not talking about anybody right now. I'm talking, like, founder talk. But she said the price of blood. What are you, a Lannister? What are you talking about? Okay, I did just swear, so hopefully I can. Anyway, she makes me. So, the price of blood. What is the price of blood? Who exactly should pay the price of blood, Congresswoman Greene? Who will be doing the killing? Who will be doing the bleeding? They just move on. They just move on and start talking about other stuff. She went off on those Republicans who voted for the infrastructure bill. Because, you know why she did that? Because there was no question from Steve Bannon where he was like, hey, you know, one second. It sounded like you were talking about politicians being killed. No, he doesn't care because he is as supportive of that as she is. And look, whether she means it or not, again, she knows what her base wants. What they want is threats of violence and vague. Because what she gave them, like, look, she was very explicit about the blood and all that, which stands out from some Republicans. But most of what she said was very similar to a lot of them. It's something, something communism, something, something freedoms. No, which freedoms? Which specific freedoms have been infringed in which ways? What do you want to do to safeguard them? She has no idea. She has no goddamn clue. She just has vague. Okay, I just swore again. I really hope that I can swear. Sophie, if you're listening to this and you're very mad at me for swearing, please post a comment and maybe I'll see it. Anyway, and here's the thing. Like, she sort of gets a little bit that sometimes you can go across the line, because later in the program, she was reading out the names of all the Republicans who'd supported the infrastructure bill, and she said, don't do any death threats. Like, think about what you need to know about your base to know that you have to tell, hey, now, I don't want to hear any death threats out of you this time. Because last time, they did, many of them, and they still will. She called them traitors. I don't mean before, I mean after saying don't do any death threats against these damn commie traitors. Okay, yeah, no, people are going to be really measured about the traitors. Anyway, she is not new to this. She indicated support for executing prominent Democrats back in 2018 and 2019 before she was running for Congress. I love consistency in our politicians. She still does it now. She liked a comment that said a bullet to the head would be a quicker way to remove Nancy Pelosi than voting her out. That's fun. She said we should execute FBI agents who were in the deep state. She liked comments about that. It's not actually saying it. Again, not very articulate, but she did like the comments. It's not just her, though. Other right-wingers are lining up to show their support for political violence. Now, this is going to be a bit of a throwback. You probably haven't seen Michael Savage in some time. He had, I believe, the shortest tenure of a host on... It wasn't Fox News, was it? Was it MSNBC? Anyway, he made a joke about somebody getting AIDS and dying and was canceled fairly immediately. Anyway, Michael Savage, who still has an audience right now on the right, he went on the Stinchfield show on Newsmax. That's a real thing. And here is how he closed out his section. He was being thanked for coming on the show, but he wasn't done just yet. Here's what he had to say.
Mr. Savage, always great having you on the program. Thank you, sir. It's good to see you.
I'm not finished yet. I have a prop for you. I have a solution to the problem. These are dueling pistols from 1865 from my antique gun collection, and it may come down to the fact... do I have to finish the sentence? I don't think so, but you get the picture. Because sometimes
you're gonna get
it. It doesn't matter what the truth is at all, Grant. All that matters is, right?
Well, Dr. Savage,
these don't even work. These are antiques. They don't work.
I know they don't even work. And I know you're not condoning violence whatsoever. I know your weapon is the same as my weapon, Dr. Savage. It's the truth and the Constitution. And those two things together with smarts up here, you got them, I got them. Together, as I said, Savage Nation, Stinchfield's Army, we cannot be beat. We don't need the weapons. We got it with our words.
He said a lot of words, but what I heard was backpedal, 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 backpedal. No. I know that you're not threatening violence as you point guns at the camera. What you're making a point about how the weapon is the brains, it's the smarts, which is why you're holding brains? No, wait, you're holding pistols. Why do you have two pistols? And why are you... Like, I'm not going to say that there isn't anything at least hypothetically cool about guns. I find guns to be interesting. I find firearm technology to be interesting. He managed to hold those guns in the literal least cool way I've ever seen. They're dueling pistols. They're antiques and I have them. That's so weird. Now, look, I've had a gun pulled on me on air before. Dan Evans once pulled a pistol on me at the end of a show. He didn't call for political violence, though, which I found to be nice. And I just love Stinchfield. He is, like, so desperate to cover. Because he had no idea, obviously. But he, in theory, could have. I mean, it is Michael Savage. He is out of his goddamn mind. That's why you're having him on. You may not have known that it would manifest in the form of drawing dueling pistols. But you knew something crazy was going to happen. Now, are we getting breaking news? Okay, we're going to have to return to that. In any event, that Michael Savage said this is the solution to a problem. It wasn't just, I have guns, guns are cool. They had been talking about possible rioting or protests after the Rittenhouse verdict comes in. And he had a solution. Michael Savage had a solution, which is people should go akimbo. That's what they should do. And again, it's just more and more common. Now, there are some who are, you know, this tied so closely to corporations that they're worried about lawsuits. That's why Stinchfield said what he did. Steve Bannon doesn't do the same thing because he's not worried like Newsmax is about being sued. But others, like Michael Savage, they know this is the only appeal they have anymore. You've spent decades scaring the hell out of people, so where does that lead? You tell them that these are literal Satanists, commie Satanists, who run the government, run society, and they're coming for you. So at the end of the day, what do? Well, you can either tell them they have to hide, or at some point they're going to have to fight back, right? And that's what they've been telling them. And so that's why you're seeing this more and more commonly. Marjorie Greene is doing it, and Michael Savage is doing it, and Steve Bannon's talking about the chaos and all that. The grift is more bloodthirsty than it perhaps has ever been before. Okay, so with that, let's jump right into this. We are getting breaking news, actually being provided by our audience, so thank you for that, that Julius Jones's sentence has been commuted to life by the governor of Oklahoma. We had actually been prepared to talk about the run-up to this, these final steps of appeals on the show, and it's one of those rare times when the answer is given during the show, and one of the far rarer times where the news is actually good. So the sentence is going to be commuted to life in prison without the possibility of parole. That's an executive order that the governor put forward today. CNN is reporting this. Now look, that is obviously better than the governor denying it and Julius Jones dying. It also isn't great, and I don't see how we can consider it justice. Like, when the system is so messed up that anything other than the worst thing seems good, man, you know that you've been beaten down over time by this system. Why am I not seeing the story? My team was trying to help me out by moving it. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, Governor Kevin Stitt put out a statement saying, after prayerful consideration and reviewing materials presented by all sides in this case, I have determined to commute Julius Jones's sentence to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. As a condition of granting clemency, Stitt ordered that Jones shall never be eligible to apply for or be considered for a commutation, pardon, or parole for the rest of his life. That was a fun sentence to read. So again, how can you do something that is kind of the best result we could have hoped for, considering the circumstances, and yet be miles and miles from justice? Look, just in case, there's a very good chance that you, like me prior to this week, I was not familiar with this case. I'm going to give you details. So, Julius Jones had been scheduled to be executed by lethal injection at 4 p.m. Today. He's been on death row for nearly 20 years, since a killing in 1999 of Paul Howell. So he was convicted and sentenced. He has maintained his innocence ever since then, saying that one of his, this other individual, Christopher Jordan, a high school friend and co-defendant in the original case, was actually the one who did the killing. Now, Jordan testified against him, was released from prison after 15 years. He says that is the individual that actually did the killing. So, look, I am not going to claim, very often I do not, I am not going to claim that I am an expert on this case, or that even if I were an expert on this case, I would be able to say with 100% certainty what actually happened back in 1999 and who actually did this. A person saying they didn't do it by itself is not proof. the fact that we very frequently lock up, hold for the rest of their lives, or even execute people who did not commit the crimes, even when there's maybe in some cases, indisputable evidence that they did not commit the crimes, that by itself doesn't prove that he didn't do it. But I will say that there are concerns that have been around for a very long time. A juror in Jones's trial wrote in an affidavit after Jones's conviction that during the trial, another juror engaged in premature deliberations and used a racial epithet while saying they should take Jones behind the jail and shoot him. So, great jury there. The jury was also not shown a photo of Jones taken days before Howell's killing that the petition says would have shown, this is a petition for appeal, says would have shown he did not match the shooter's description. Several jurors have come forward and indicated this evidence might have changed the outcome of the case. And changing the outcome of the case might have meant that he never spent a day in jail, potentially. And so all of this has all been around for a very long time. He says, his friends say, his family say he didn't do it. They say that he had an alibi. The authorities looked into it and they said that they don't think it was a valid alibi. But again, you know, the system, God only knows. What we do know, though, is that you don't get Paul Howell back if you kill Julius Jones, okay? And that he has already spent 20 years in prison. So now, as a product of what happened today in this breaking news, he will never be able to apply for anything that will result in him not spending the last days of his life in prison. So, again, how excited are we supposed to be? How satisfied are we supposed to be? Is this supposed to be justice? That if the man is innocent, he shouldn't be in prison at all, right? Now, Kevin Stitt didn't say that his decision to do this means he thinks he's innocent, but you have to look into the evidence and you have to decide, do you think that he was or not? Again, there is nothing gained by the state murdering people. Indisputable, nothing is gained. The idea that it's some sort of deterrent has been, that idea has been knocked down for literally decades. So anyway, look, I'm glad that this happened, you know, in comparison to how this story could have ended, but the system is so messed up. And what's interesting too, my final note, I guess, on this is, there are elements of this that are so similar to cases going on in America right now. Like, you don't see shades of the McMichael trial or the Rittenhouse trial in this. Jurors with, the racial biases, juries being selected to seemingly deliver a certain product, evidence not being shown or not being allowed. I mean, they wouldn't show a photo that might make him not fit the description that have been given by the witnesses. You know, they're not allowed to call in the Rittenhouse case the people that he killed victims. There's so many manipulations. This is from 1999. We are 22 years out from that. And are we any closer to justice? Like a system that delivers justice more regularly. Anyway, I guess it's good news. Let's take, I guess, the good news that we can get.
He is not guilty. He deserves a not guilty verdict. And I sure hope he gets it, because you know what? Kyle Rittenhouse would probably make a pretty good congressional intern. We may reach out to him and see if he'd be interested in helping the country in additional ways.
Okay, so Matt Gaetz is an interesting figure, not only because of the legal challenges that are facing him. Can this guy leave one teenager in America alone, please? But anyway, there he's defending Kyle Rittenhouse, saying he didn't do anything wrong. And you know what? I might even try to get him to be my intern. As our team points out, we do have to acknowledge that Kyle Rittenhouse does have some qualifications. He is a national figure on trial for fatally shooting two people and injuring a third during protests that he should have never been at, wielding a gun he never should have had in a state he doesn't live in. So that was fun. It is, like, he's got kind of got that go-getter thing, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse. He's not going to let state lines or laws or social prohibitions against needless killing stop him from accomplishing his goals. I don't know exactly how you word that, like on a CV for Congress, but Matt Gaetz has very low standards, I guess. Anyway, the overall point that he's making is that Rittenhouse did nothing wrong. And since the moment that Kyle Rittenhouse did what he did, we knew that they were going to have to line up behind him. This is a vigilante who is acting out on their advice, implicit or explicit. And now they all have to show that they are the most supportive of him, even to the point of saying he did nothing wrong. And I talked about this on Wednesday with Anna Kasparian. It would be one thing if they said, look, we see the video, they were coming at him. He was terrified. Why not? He's been told every day of his life that he should be terrified constantly. He was terrified, so it was self-defense. But he shouldn't have been there. He should certainly shouldn't have had the gun. Why would you carry an AR-15 while you're being a medic? Or what? Why would you do that? He never should have been there. I wish he hadn't been there. I hope nothing like this ever happens, but it was self-defense. That's a position that someone could hold. Have you heard anyone who has that position, by the way, that says he was legally in his rights to defend himself, but I wish that he didn't, and I hope this never happens again? I don't know that I've ever heard that position actually articulated. And it seems so common sense, and it seems almost defensible. Now, it's still ceding way too much ground. The idea that simply because self-defense laws are the way they are, we can't speak out against them, that we have to just accept that they have to be that way. They're not set up to produce these sorts of outcomes, to protect certain people while not protecting others. It cedes all of that territory, but it at least seems a bit defensible, but they can't do that. It wasn't just that he was defending himself. He didn't do anything wrong. Even the laws that he broke in having that gun, he didn't do anything wrong. And what is the point of this? It is to tell the audience that these are good people. It is patriotic to do this. And it is, again, at least consistent. Prior to Kyle Rittenhouse, they were saying this. You might have to defend your territory. You might have to do... They're still saying this in the media. Tucker Carlson was talking about people being put down. You remember the video that he showed where it was people like breaking into a store? Now, he doesn't want to specifically say, I wish two people with AR-15s were in that store gunning down those particular protesters, but he is saying they should have been put down. And Matt Gaetz is just a Fox News person that Fox News doesn't want. That's all he is. I understand that there's an REP before his name now, but we know that earlier this year he was trying to get a job in media. It's the same thing to these people. It doesn't have to be, by the way. There are some fairly major obvious distinctions between me and Ilhan Omar, or Rashida Tlaib, or Cori Bush. This is a stupid chucklehead online media thing, and that's actually delivering, understanding, coming up with solutions, communicating them, and trying to organize to make it happen. Major distinctions between politics and media, at least in theory. But that is if you think there are problems that need to be solved. But Matt Gaetz does not. It is all just trolling for him and Cawthorn and Boebert, Marjorie Greene, all of them. That's all. There's no distinction. And honestly, why be the representative? You have to like wear a suit and you have to drive to DC. He'd prefer to just do a show. If he could make it on Patreon, he would. So many of them somehow do. Very opaque finances on a lot of these crowdfunding things. Anyway, by the way, he also, because I want to make sure that you understand, that's the theme of the show and the week and probably the year, is that the right has nothing but violence and hatred and suspicion, fear and jealousy and all of that. But those emotions lead towards the threats of violence. He defended Paul Gosar's video saying, anime is fiction. Next week we might be indicting the Wile E. Coyote. Because it's a cartoon, it can't be a threat. So Matt Gaetz had a guy, what, like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that was threatening to kill him, which is crazy and wrong and should never happen. But under Matt Gaetz' logic, if that guy had done it in the form of a cartoon, if he'd put his head on Rick or Morty, then I guess it wouldn't be serious. It wouldn't be threatening. There would be no reason for the authorities to get involved. Is that what you think, Matt Gaetz? Is that the loophole? Is there a gigantic cartoon-shaped loophole which is probably the shape of a body busting through a wall, can you fit your threats through that loophole? I'm not going to test it. I'm not going to say that anyone should. But obviously, they don't actually think this. Matt Gaetz. What do you think Kyle Rittenhouse, after he gets off, because the system has been designed to get people like him off, what do you think he's going to be doing in a year or two? Okay, with that, I was going to say we're done with the right-wingers, but are we? Bill Maher is on a quest recently to be wrong on every single issue, taking the wrong stand everywhere a person can stand. And now, he wants to talk a little bit about critical race theory. I know you've been waiting to hear what Bill Maher thinks about critical race theory. Well, here is his commentary.
There's something going on in the schools that never went on before. Now, I'm not in schools. I have no interaction with children whatsoever. But I do understand this issue because I read accounts from parents, from educators, from people. And this is all over the country. With American history, we learned about the Civil War. I mean, they mentioned racism. We understood slavery and Lincoln and blah, blah, blah. But they didn't really go into it any more than Gone with the Wind goes into it. It was there, but you didn't feel it viscerally. Now we're doing that, and I think that's a good thing. People should understand that. That's different than teaching that racism is the essence of America. That's what people get upset about. Or involving children who are probably not old enough or sophisticated enough to understand this very complicated issue. Yes, kids are taught and sometimes separated into groups, oppressor and oppressed. Again, does a kid even know what those words mean? Would they gravitate toward that if you hadn't told them?
There are a lot of reasons to have a problem with that video. A lot of really lazy thinking, a lot of needless surrendering to right-wing talking points. But just understand that. Look, I'm not going to say I've never watched Bill Maher and liked it. Years ago, I did. But he has been ceding massive ground to the right wing, whether out of ignorance or because he actually agrees with them, for literally decades. All the stuff about political correctness. Right-wing narrative that some people needlessly gave to them. They're doing the same thing now on cancel culture as well as on critical race theory. And there was a lot of lazy thinking there. Now, look, he did say some stuff that was okay. He said, it's good that we're learning more about blah, blah, blah. Because I learned about Lincoln and blah, blah, blah. That's a bad sign if, like, your example is slavery and Lincoln and blah, blah, blah. We should learn more. Now, he indicates that we should, but then he launches into, I hear these accounts of the teachers and the parents, and I don't think that it's right what they're doing. Okay, well, what are they doing? You got some anecdotal information, like the separating into oppressed and oppressors. What, did one elementary school teacher do that? Now, look, if one elementary school teacher did that, is that good? No. We might even cover it. It's not a good thing to do, but it is not the status quo of education. It's not happening in classrooms around the country. It is not what the Republicans are saying. And if you understand nothing, Bill Maher, you should understand an opportunistic political narrative. And the fact that you're just giving it to them. And the stakes when you give it to them is what we understand about our history. He said, the idea that racism is the essence of America? Now look, it's not the only essence of America, but it has been at the core of America from the very beginning, and it is not a bad thing to understand that. Understanding our history, being exposed to it, and trying to learn from it is not a bad thing. Ignorance isn't better. And why do I need to explain this to a person who considers himself a liberal, maybe even calls himself a progressive? And he seems to imply that you should learn this stuff at some point, but when? They're dragging kids into this. Well, yeah, we teach kids all sorts of things. And he says, well, yeah, but they might not be sophisticated enough to understand it. Well, when should they be? And if we wall off, like, the content of substance that's necessary to truly understand all these other issues, because race is embedded in our history, economy, our response to different issues, society, pop culture. How long should we wait until 5 years after you learn all those things that you learn about the racial component? Maybe instead of assuming that kids can't understand it, we talk to the actual educators and figure out the best way to teach them at different grade levels. I don't know, if kids can memorize 1,000 dinosaurs, I think they can understand that sometimes some people are bad to other people, and that that has historically been really bad, and that that's worth something to teach. But no. And look, honestly, just not wanting to do that, not thinking it's worth time, that is bad enough. And it's bad enough especially for a wealthy, older, white man to push, to say, I think it's not necessary that kids learn about racism beyond the Lincoln stuff. I'll occasionally say that they should, but I can't seem to come up with a situation in which they should. That would be bad enough. But to do it at a time where the right is trying to substitute substantive conversations about every issue with some vague about, oh, we should respect the parents more, unless the parents' wish is that their kids learn about race and learn an accurate history of the United States, that is even worse. It is so lazy. Like, he is supposed to be, like, sort of self-destructively critical of both sides, kind of. But all too often, those who made their brand attacking both sides now will not do it for the right. They just can't identify what's going on. They can see the flaws in people like the Schumers or the Pelosis or whatever, but for some reason, it just becomes impossible to diagnose on the right. And I get it. He's friends with a lot of those people. He brings a lot of them on his show. But they're not necessarily good people. They're not necessarily operating in good faith. They don't necessarily give a shit about any of this. But it's very convenient coming off of your election losses and when you totally biffed an entire goddamn pandemic to suddenly pretend that you're the ones who's for the parents. And Bill Maher has been around long enough that he should be able to understand at least a little bit of this.
Well, it's going to be up to us, Hallie, about what happens to us during the holiday season. We've got to start right now getting anybody who's eligible, and I hope in the next day or two, that's going to be essentially everybody that's been initially vaccinated, to get them boosted.
We are entering into the period of the year that last year was the roughest, the dark winter. Remember, we talked about a dark winter, and they laughed at us. Why are you pretending it's going to be so bad? It was really bad. A lot of people died. Well, we're entering that same time of year, but there are some things that are different. Now, some of it's good, some of it's bad. We have things like the Delta variant and other variants that are pretty bad. So we have that. But we also have a lot of people that have been vaccinated. However, many of those people that were vaccinated earlier. And I know that this is inconvenient, but the efficacy of the vaccines does wane over time, not equally for all of them. I had Johnson & Johnson. That apparently waned the most. And so boosters are available. Now, is it annoying to have to get a booster? Yes. Is it annoying to ever get any shot? Yes. Getting the flu shot sucks. We also generally try to do it every year. So the idea that you might have to get a shot every year isn't super new. And you know what? You can get it at the same time as your flu shot. So, look, I'm not going to say that there is nothing about this that is annoying, but if you want to be able to have a normal Thanksgiving, a normal Christmas, a normal Hanukkah, a normal New Year's, a normal everything, you could potentially do that, but you might still have to be a little bit responsible. Now, he suggests in the video further on that you might still want to consider, if you have people traveling in, wearing masks. Now, I think that realistically for a lot of people, in a thing that's about eating, that is going to have some holes in it. But you can definitely get boosted. You can definitely at least get boosted. And if I can try to encourage you a little bit to do that, let it be this. If you were previously vaccinated, you are likely to get less sick when you get sick. But long COVID is still a very serious thing, and we are still finding out more over time. At least 50% of people who survive COVID-19 experience a variety of physical and psychological health issues for 6 months or more after their initial recovery, according to research on the long-term effects of the disease. So they found, looking at 250,000 adults and children, more than half experienced a decline in general well-being, resulting in weight loss, fatigue, fever, or pain. Now, I want to give you a more specific idea of what this manifests as. About 20% had decreased mobility, 25% had trouble thinking or concentrating called brain fog, 30% develop an anxiety disorder, 25% have breathing problems, 20% have hair loss or skin rashes. There are also cardiovascular issues, which are very common, chest pain, palpitations, things like that, stomach and gastrointestinal problems as well. So these are very common. They can last for a very long time. And you are, especially if you're vaccinated, look, even if you're unvaccinated, lots of people survive it, but what does survival look like? Do you want these sorts of problems? Do you want brain fog? Do you want issues with mobility? Do you want chronic chest problems? These are bad things, okay? Anyway, we do have some good news to balance this out, though. First of all, that boosters are widely, freely available. I got boosted for J&J. I got Pfizer a few weeks back. My wife is actually getting a booster later on today. So I know that we're media figures. We're not supposed to encourage you for medical stuff, but that's never stopped them with ivermectin and shit, so whatever. Anyway, there is other good news coming, so let's try to end the show on a bit of a good note, and that is that we'd previously talked about Pfizer's COVID-19 pill. So they say it reduced the risk of COVID hospitalization or death by 89% when administered within 3 days of the onset of symptoms, which is very similar to the protection that you might get from vaccination. In this case, though, look, lots of people are just not going to get vaccinated. We understand that at this point. Maybe they'll use this. I have not yet seen much of an indication about where the right is going to come down on this. I don't rule out the possibility that they will be against this pill too, purely because it's a very, it's strong protection against COVID, apparently. And again, all of this is coming from Pfizer, so we'll have to see, but the CDC seems to agree. Anyway, there's also a bit of more developments about this pill. So one is that Pfizer is going to be allowing manufacturers around the globe to make this pill. So they say it's going to supply countries, 53% of the world's population will be allowed to manufacture this pill. They're going to be foregoing royalties in low-income countries and waive them in others as long as COVID-19 remains an international public health emergency. Now, there are a lot of potential wiggly points on that. Who exactly is declaring that it's an emergency that they would agree with? How long are they going to do this after they get the positive press? All of that is true, but this is sort of what we were hoping for the vaccine. Maybe this can save a lot of lives in place of that. Also, the Biden administration has ordered 10 million courses of the COVID treatment pill. Now, I understand it still hasn't even been authorized. They're waiting for that. But they believe that it will be and that the pills will start to arrive near the end of the year and through till next year, which is particularly in the absence of a unified willingness to get vaccinated and stay vaccinated, about as good as we could hope for. Maybe some of the people who will go to the hospital, hospitalized for COVID or whatever, maybe their lives can be saved. Maybe some who get exposed will take this and never end up in the hospital. But we also have some people who have been on their deathbed denying that COVID is real. So it is likely that there will still be needless suffering and death, even in the wake of this. But we can try to make it as little as possible. Maybe we can at least do that. Okay, everybody, we are getting close to the end of the show. I'm just going to read a few more comments. I'm going to pretend that we're closing in the normal fashion. Thank you to all of you who are here. We actually have kind of had more people watching on both Twitch and YouTube than we normally do, which again is super weird. But thank you for being here. I really do appreciate it. I wish Delaney Stamp had been able to be with me. This is, by the way, the first solo TDR since before the pandemic. Many of you didn't even watch back then. You may not know that we used to do the occasional just full solo show, and we ended up with one today. We almost had one earlier this week, but Brett stepped in. In any event, after this show, you know what's going to come up and probably will look like it normally should? I think Indisputable, right? Indisputable. Go to youtube.com/indisputabletyt or Twitch. Nina Turner is supposed to be joining him. Addison Hosner will be there for a debate as well. Let's see. I have a surprise for you that my wife has now provided. We've got my dog, Hilo. He's my producer. And he was walking around the outside of the shed while all of this was going on. Hilo, thank you for making an appearance. We also have little Abby, who doesn't want to be on the show right now. She just wants to lay down. It feels like the beginning of lockdown all over again. Thank you, pups, for being there. Anyway, well, let's read a few of your comments before we close things out. Thank you to Loic. Oh, I think I might have read these. Thank you. Kita, again, thank you for the upgrading membership. Vanta Dragon hit tier 1. Thank you so much. Mandy says, my son was 2 years old when an adult told him the cat was afraid of him because he's Hispanic. So pretty sure white kids can learn about racism. Kids of color don't have the privilege of picking an age. That is a great point. A great point. But again, Bill Maher is coming with the ignorance of his privilege. He didn't have those experiences growing up, so he doesn't understand that those experiences can be had by other people. Anyway, that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the show. Much appreciate you being here. I am hoping and expecting that tomorrow's show will be of the normal variety. We'll have Brett Ehrlich. We'll be throwing away some garbage. And to that end, if you go to the community tab on our YouTube channel, you can vote for our garbage person of the day. Can't wait to see who that ends up being. It's been a pretty garbagey day as today. With our A and B blocks that demonstrated. Anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll try to let you know if it's going to be another home-based show. We'll find out together. But until next time. Oh, also, really fast. 33 minutes. Our Tier 3 Q&A will be happening on YouTube. So everybody, wait for that notification. It should be coming up. You'll see it soon. I think it might be posted on the community tab too. But until then, stay safe out there. Stay sane out there. And I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.